8 minutes after 9 o'clock. Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Eusebius McKaiser Show. I hope that you're in high spirits wherever you might be listening from this morning. Except, of course, if you are Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane. Although I suppose she might be in high spirits. It depends on what she finds to be the most important thing in life. To be a winner or to be consistent. If she thinks winning is important, then obviously she's not in high spirits this morning. If she thinks being consistent is important in life, then she is in high spirits because she's consistently wrong. Eh? Just think about it. Oh, it took a minute there, eh? Some of my colleagues are still waking up here in the studio. So obviously she's consistently being whacked around by our judiciary, and that's why today there isn't diversity on the front pages of the newspapers. Aki, have you seen how wrong she gets it?
Hey? You said high, right? But she is high this morning in the high court.
She is, I don't know, can one use a sporting analogy? She's as consistent as Kaiser Chiefs when it comes to being on the wrong side of
Wow, that's a good analogy
law.
To use.
It is a very good analogy, isn't it?
It's a very good analogy to
It's
use.
Triggering, but it's effective.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, Kaiser Chiefs have lost their last three games with Pirates. So
I saw, you know, those Chappies papers that we grew up with.
Yes,
with the
yes,
you know
the rappers.
Yeah, I saw one. I wanted to actually show it. Maybe if I wonder if I can get it quickly enough, I can at least show
on,
it
let
to
me help you.
Show it to our listeners who are watching the opening streaming of the show. The rest of you, I'll tweet this for you. But it is hilarious. Aki, can you show the camera there and then read it for the people who are not watching us on Facebook? And what does it say?
No.
You can read it.
You know why you're making me read it? So I can I can take this to the BCCSA, right? Did you know 5-year-old kids have never seen Kaiser Chiefs beat on Adam Pirates?
Oh, I love it. Love it. So obviously the front page of the newspapers are all coalescing around the same story. The Citizen asks, why does Boosie get it so wrong? Well, like I said, she's addicted to consistency, consistently wrong. The Sowetan, the People's Paper, Mkhwebane's Monday Blues. Absolutely. Right? Spot on. Business Day, same thing. Court rules against Mkhwebane yet again. Right? And even the Star, our Jersey paper, troubles pile up for embattled Busisiwe. Now, couple of things here. Firstly, sit down, EFF, with your stupid race reductionism. Some of us work darn hard every single day to get white supremacists in particular to take seriously racism. And then you go and put jam in their mouths by pretending that every time you lose a court case, it's because you are black. No, you lost it because you were on the wrong side of the legal argument. And I want to explain it for those who think that there were some weird shenanigans going on here and South African judges cannot be trusted. The core of why the court found against her is actually really, really simple. And I'm going to try and cut through unnecessary Latin and legalese and explain it to you as follow. The court said to her, listen, Advocate Mkhwebane, what's up with your impatience? Nothing is going to be lost if we first allow Pravin Gordhan, with or without his middle name that Julius tries to use as some sort of allusion to him being of Indian descent. Because Pravin, we've said so often, we think of it as English. Nothing will be lost, says the court, if you just wait 5 seconds to see whether Pravin can win the review of your main findings against him. That's all. That's actually all the court said. That's all you need to know. That's enough for you to be clever over lunch. The court said, the world is not going to come to an end, Boosie, if you just wait 5 minutes and let's hear this man's gripe with your main findings. It's that simple. It really is that simple. Now, obviously, if you're going to go and write a legal theory exam this morning, you need to put down a little bit more on the paper. So for those of you on your way to a law test, here's the little bit extra. But what I've just summarized is really all there is to it. There's a test in case law to determine whether or not an interdict should be granted. And it goes as follows. I'm seeking the interdict, call me Pravin, against Boosie. And I go to the court and I say, my lord or my lady, potentially my rights have been infringed here. Looks like it. Secondly, let's stop this woman from having me lashed by the president and being investigated by the criminal justice system and by parliament. Because once that happens, my life is over. And please don't make my life be over, because I can guarantee you her main findings were wrong. So let's not have me be lashed by the president just yet until I've shown you that she's wrong on the main findings. And then Pravin's argument then goes, which the court accepted, nothing will be lost for society, the public, because the public is the important part in the title, public protector. If the public just waits 5 minutes for me to demonstrate in another case that she's wrong on her main findings. But I will lose something if it turns out that I win my battle against her on the main findings and the court agrees with me, but then it's too late because by then my reputation has been harmed. I have my political career potentially over. My family has endured a lot. I've endured the loss. The costs are too high to have me be punished in the meantime and later for everyone to agree that she was wrong on the main findings against me. But Pravin's lawyers then say, we'll go a step further. We'll explain to you why she is not inconvenienced if she waits. But I will be inconvenienced if we don't wait for me to show that she's wrong on her main findings. She won't be inconvenienced because you know why, m'lady? Because every single day there are examples where her own office and her lawyers conceded this, routinely are willing to suspend remedial action pending a review of the main findings. She's already told us that they're in the habit of allowing this kind of things. So I'm not asking her to do anything special because I'm a minister. I'm asking her to do something that is actually quite routine for the public protector to do, which is to say, to allow the remedial action not to be set aside, but for us to just go wach so biki until the review of the main findings had been dealt with. That's all I'm asking. Seems like my rights are violated. Her remedial action is incoherent. And if I'm wrong, my lady, nothing will have been lost in society if I get lashed and punished 10 seconds from now rather than 1 second from now. That is how simple it is. No racism on the part of the court, no judicial overreach, and quite frankly, both the EFF and the public protector must simply shlalapansi.
702. Open line.
Okay, so that's my analysis of the case yesterday. Did you see it differently? You want to debate it, the implications? Anything else that's on your mind? 011-883-0702. Give us a call right now. You're also most welcome to SMS me 31702. And of course, you can start a conversation on the open line. Use the hashtag 702 open line. Okay, that's the way to do it. Malamulele says, Eusebius disrespecting and ridiculing the public critic. No, dude. No. Number one, if you don't have an argument, kind of like the EFF, on where the legal analysis is wrong, go and tweet to your heart's content. I don't give a damn. The only thing I fear is excellence in argumentation. Unless and until you can explain to me, even Dalian Porfu for that matter, even the lawyers, the attorneys for the EFF, or alternatively for the public protector, call us right now. Debate with me. Unless and until you can explain where the legal argumentation of the court falls short, I don't care about your tweets. It's going to do nothing to me. On this show, argumentation wins. And sleight of hand never wins. 17 minutes after 9. 19 minutes after 9 o'clock. Kustas, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Eusebius. Talking about the Mkhwebana. Hey, let me just start here, Eusebius. There is an investigation that the public protector is going to launch on Eskom with regards to IPPs. Earlier this morning, Christian phoned on the political desk on Bongani Biengwa.
Mm-hmm.
You can go listen to the clip.
I listened.
You did listen to it? Okay, good. Then let me pass that part. He says it's going to cost us nothing. Now, in front of me, I'm sitting with a statement that was released during the financial year and 31st March 2018 by Eskom. This is what they are saying. In short, the decision to sign the PPA agreement with IPPs has also significant implications for our financial sustainability. With IPP power, which is more expensive than the current average cost of Eskom, is being purchased ahead of Eskom offering, thereby creating additional surplus. But now, to cut the story short, Eskom purchased IPPs at 222 rand cents per kilowatt, all right, at the cost of 21.7 billion. Mm-hmm. So Christianland says to us, it's going to cost Eskom nothing. And yet, we're supposed to pay for it. You see, there is deep state capture here at Eskom, because right now, we have signed 58 billion rands worth of Eskom deals, sorry, of renewable deals. One, where does the money come from? Two, who is going to benefit? According to Mukwebane, she says 70% of the money over the next 20 years will benefit foreign companies. 70% goes overseas, 20 to 30% goes to our banks and BEE. Now, why did Eskom, even politicians, put pressure on Eskom to sign these IPPs if these IPPs were good for the country? Eskom says it's too much, we cannot afford, it's going to affect us, our money. But we have signed them still, they are standing today. So when Christianland says to us, one, that is not going to cost anything, two, that's not true. He's an expert, he should know this. Because he should have read what Eskom is stating on their statement ending 31st of March 2018. Two, why did the politicians force Eskom to sign this thing at a cost of 21.7 billion a year? Where is that money going to come from? Maybe Christian can answer to say it's going to come from you as a consumer, because it's being transferred to us.
Let's do this, Kostas. I hear you. I love your passion. I like the fact that you're engaging factually with what Chris had said. I'll simply put it not quite on the back burner. We can do another discussion. We've done at least two shows in the last 8 months or so around IPPs and the costing. Obviously, experts will see it differently, crunch the numbers differently and what have you. I am not an expert in this field at all, but I promise you I'm going to put it on my list of potential topics for us to do. If not within the next 2 weeks, then certainly once I come back from a little bit of a break that I'm going to have soon. Oh my God. Breaking news. Zodwa's wedding has been called off. Sorry, I know we're in the middle of talking about law and economics and energy and security. Times Live reports. After months of prep, planning, and pre-wedding jitters, Zodwa Wabantu was left nursing a broken heart after her wedding was called off this past Saturday. Quote from Zodwa, "I cancel the wedding. I'm no longer getting married. Me and Ntobeko are finished. We have split." End of breaking news.
702. Open line.
Shame, man. Aubrey, good morning.
Morning, Eusebius. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not going to say that the judge is racist, and I'm not going to say she's not racist because I don't personally know her. I'm not going to say she's captured or she's not captured.
Well, good, because if you say any of those things, you better have your ducks in a row.
Well, listen to what I have to say first. But what my observation was, having seen the actual hearing, I was less than impressed in terms of her command or even comprehension of the English language. And I somehow feel that, you know, judges need to, there needs to be a certain level that the judges need to have, or level of comprehension at least, in order for them to sit. I mean, especially in the High Court. I mean, I'll give you an example. And I thought this was very unexpected from an actual judge. So there was a point where Advocate Ngoya Tobi was talking about the president reprimanding or disciplining Minister Pravin Gordhan. And the judge then interjected and said to him, "So are you saying that the president must now shout at Minister Gordhan?" And I thought, why would a judge at a high court, you know, we're talking about a president of the country, and she would specifically use the word shout, as if we're talking about preschool children, you know, that have been naughty and need to be sent to the naughty corner.
Can I say this on that example, Aubrey? I was so scared when I heard her say that, because I'd listened to Advocate Tim Becker and Kai Toby at that point, same as you. And the guy was brilliant. I still want to keep that recording. It doesn't matter that the EFF lost, were on the losing side of the argument. He was brilliant. And I still want to use his entire 40-minute, almost soliloquy, in some of my master classes on debating, not just about law as a subject, but actually debating strategy and skill. And then she listened, and I thought to myself, oh God, even the judge obviously doesn't have any questions because he's so lucid. And then she goes on a whole silly question to him. So when I read the judgment, I was carefully looking to see whether that kind of silly response to him during oral argument will be reflected in her analysis in the written judgment. And mercifully, that wasn't the case.
The other observation that I made was, if you look at her judgment on the, because she's the same judge that made the judgment on the Melusi Gigaba versus Fireblade case. Now, if you read that judgment, compare it to this one, it's literally a copy and paste job. You know, I'm not, I don't want to get into the politics of this, but these are just observations that I'm making. And if we are going to take judges seriously and their judgment seriously, they need to take us seriously. I mean, for me, for an entire judge to be sitting, you know, in a trial and using such simplistic and such very basic language, and then at the end to give a judgment and copy and paste, you know, for me, I don't know. You know, it's unbecoming for me.
No, not really. I think your argument overreaches. Here's where I think you are spot on. I think she misunderstood. Firstly, she's not the one who talked about shouting. Tim Becker did. But where she was too quick of the mark is that she missed the point of his example. His example was obvious. And his example was in service of a really beautiful little constitutional argument. And as you know, of course, the point that Tim Becker was making, which for me was plain, I don't know how she missed his point. The point that he was making is that there is nothing in the Public Protector's remedial action that subverts the discretionary power of the president in terms of his executive authority to decide the manner that he wants to use for rebuking Pravin Gordhan. That's the point that he made. It was almost like the shouting was neither here nor there. It was off the cuff, and she missed that point. So she elevated to a status that she shouldn't have. Hold on, Aubrey, I'm not done. So you are right there. I mean, I don't know why you want to interject. I'm explaining why you are right. But here is where I think you are completely, obviously wrong as a matter of textual analysis. The test for an interdict doesn't change between cases. The test is going to be the same test from case law, and then it has to be applied to the facts before the court. And what she did very well and simply in the written judgment is to show how there's a prima facie right, how there's a balance of convenience that falls on the side of Pravin Gordhan's team, and how there is no other remedy, which is the other important thing, and that as a sort of postscript to that, that at any rate, there were also intrinsic weaknesses, not on the EFF side, but on the Public Protector side. For example, some really vague and incoherent language in that remedial action. So when you say it's a copy and paste job, you are quite literally lying.
Have you seen that judgment that I'm talking about?
Yes, I have. And I also know how the two judgments differ. This judgment yesterday was an application of a legal test to the facts before the court. You know what I'm saying
is
true.
I can show you paragraphs that are identical between those two judgments. That's the copy and paste job that I'm talking
about. But Aubrey, I'm saying that's neither here nor there. What I'm saying to you is that if you want to critique yesterday's judgment, you've got to tell me an answer to the following question baldly. Do you think that there was a misapplication of the law? Yes or no?
I'm not, but that's not my argument. But that's your argument. That's not my argument.
Yes, because that's the only thing that matters. Is there a miscarriage of judgment? Was there an administration of justice? Yes, it is, Aubrey, because the question is not how is the English. I mean, what you're talking about in English is the most ridiculous thing to try and draw attention to.
You're serious. You're not listening to what I'm saying.
I am. You're confusing me not listening with me not agreeing with you. I hear you. You are very lucid, and I think that you're being petty about language.
No, the fact that you're saying that I'm being petty about language shows that you don't understand what I'm talking about. You didn't listen to what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the fact that she used that, it displays the fact that she couldn't comprehend what Advocate Mugai Tobi was saying. The fact that it wasn't about the fact that she used the word shout. You can use the word shout in a court of law. My point is that she could not comprehend what he was saying. So he was saying it in tongue in cheek, so to speak. But she took it literally. And that's the point that I'm trying to make, is that she would take things that were, she would take something that is tongue-in-cheek, that an ordinary person who's not even, you know, is not even an attorney could see that this is in tongue-in-cheek. But she takes it literally.
Aubrey, that is not true. That's why I'm saying to you, you haven't done textual analysis of her written judgment. In the written judgment, she doesn't show the same lack of comprehension about what Tim Becker meant with the shouting example. In the written judgment, she says the following. For argument's sake, let's assume she says effectively. Let's assume that Thembeka was right and that the president will still have discretionary power about the form of the rebuke. Nevertheless, the prima facie rights that are infringed upon my analysis, she says, means that his ability to shout or to give stronger sanction against her will not be undermined if everyone just waits 5 minutes for part B of the application to be heard. So the thing that annoyed you as you were eating popcorn and watching the oral argument did not carry through to the written judgment. And that's where you are. That's the sense in which you are being petty, because like you, I was dismayed by her inability to understand his point. But that did not carry through in a way into the written judgment whereby you can say there was a failure to administer justice properly yesterday. I mean, that would just be an absurd inference.
Okay, last question. Is there a relationship between what happens during the oral arguments and the actual judgment?
No, not always. Actually, no. Ask any lawyer, ask any of your lawyer friends who are practicing. No, not always. Because remember, that's a full flight of conversation between them, which is why the written judgment that is handed down is so important. And that is the ultimate text that will be used even in a higher court if there is an appeal. That is the record that really, really matters.
Okay. All right. Let's leave it there.
Yeah, I mean, you're most welcome to say you agree to disagree. But until you prove to me that her misunderstanding of him in oral argument led to a miscarriage of judgment, your arguments fall short.
Well, the thing is, when you say let's leave it there,
I don't know which bit of what I said you are dissatisfied by.
Let's leave it there, and you continue. So I'm replying to what you said.
Okay, let's leave it there, but you haven't read the written judgment. 9:30, here's the latest in EWN headlines. 27 minutes before 10 o'clock, what else can you look forward to in the show today? After 10 o'clock, we ask the question, how may we yet deepen accountability in society? I think there is an accountability deficit in the history of accountability, not quite properly being entrenched, neither before nor after 1994, even though we often use the word and it rolls off the tongue. What does it actually mean, practically? What needs to be done to make sure that institutions that are supposed to safeguard a culture of accountability within the state, private sector, and society at large actually function optimally? A really difficult, but I think a critically important question. We're never going to reach our potential as a democracy unless and until we properly have a culture of accountability. But I think it's very important to unpack that, to examine that, and to give it some practical meat. And I've got a couple of guests who are excellent, who've given this enormous thought, and I've no doubt you can enjoy listening to them in the second hour of the show. And a little bit later, many of you are dismayed by images of what you are seeing going down in the capital, in Tshwane, and we're going to try and get to grips with some of the issues there in terms of some of the protests that many of you would have seen over the last day or so. For the rest of this hour, it's still over to you, 011-883-0702. Harry, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Morning, CBS. Thanks for taking my call.
It's a pleasure, sir. What made you call in today?
I just wanted to comment on your lambasting of the previous caller.
Sure.
Yeah, but I totally agree with you in what you said, that the language of the judge gave no bearing on her application of the law. Because even though she spoke, even if she made simplistic comments, she still applied the law correctly.
Yeah, I mean, it's that simple. Yes. Obviously, Aubrey is a very thoughtful listener and engager of politics and of this show, right? I'm very aware of that. But he was also trying to be very disingenuous, starting off by saying, I make no averments about her competence, race, or otherwise. But effectively, he is inserting a narrative into this public conversation that says, oh, but if you actually listen to a language and stuff, or cutting and pasting. I mean, of course, there are only so many ways in which you can articulate how the law for whether or not to set aside, to grant an interdict works. So cutting and pasting, you're trying to suggest the person is at worst intellectually lazy and at best that there was a miscarriage of justice, which is a dangerous thing to insert into the public space when so many people don't understand legal processes.
Exactly. And the thing is, if you look at it, not just legally, if you look at it with other professionals like doctors, just because a doctor may not speak well does not mean that they are not a good doctor. Maybe they'll mispronounce words, or they'll put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. But they will know their work. when they're diagnosing you, they will do what they need to do. They know their work very well. I've seen it in at law school as well, with students that maybe grew up in rural areas and they don't speak as eloquently, but their application of the law surpasses people who speak so well in such a manner that you'd be left dumbfounded.
You know, the language thing is interesting, though, Harry, because here I want to defend Aubrey a little bit, even though him and I disagreed, obviously, as you heard. Firstly, to your point, I totally agree with you. As Aubrey was talking about her language, I thought, God, this takes me back to law school when I was in Rhodes. And I remember the first time we had a black lecturer, because all the staff were white when I started in the law department at Rhodes. And the first black person we had was Professor Mqeke, who was an expert in customary law. And you can imagine how that affirmed white supremacists' view that black people can't study law. And when they do, it must be something like customary law. And then eventually, by the time I was in third year, he took us for law of contract. And I can't tell you how many students, black and white, not just white, would go and complain to the dean, Professor Midgley, that they can't understand the guy. But really what they meant was they took his accent and the way he was speaking English as some sort of indicator of his pedagogical competence as a teacher and as an academic, right? But to be fair on Aubrey, the judge, and I think Aubrey misdescribed it, it's not that there's a problem with how she speaks English. She didn't comprehend what Thembeka said. And I agree with him on that. When Thembeka said shouting, he didn't literally mean that the president must shout at Pravin. His point was only that the other side, i.e. the Pravin Gordhan's team, were overreaching in their claim that the public protector is subverting the constitutional authority of the president.
Okay.
Thanks, Britt. Thanks for calling in. Much appreciated. Carol, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Morning. I have a question. All this nonsense with the public protector, it almost seems like a vendetta. Who's paying for all of these going backwards and forwards? It's like a ping pong ball.
Sometimes you, occasionally her.
Sometimes?
You and I, and only occasionally her.
Well, then I think it's time to stop the whole nonsense.
More
things that her office should be doing,
spending
money on. This country's financially in trouble.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, when public servants engage in vexatious lawfare, they ought to be punished so that their minds can be concentrated about not wasting, A, their resources in terms of time, but also, B, public monies that really ought to be spent far better. Michael, you've been holding on. Thank you so much for your patience. What do you want to say?
All right. It's about money. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Cool.
I just want to find out what must happen that the parliamentary processes must immediately kick in as far as the process of dealing with the test of the public protector. Because as it stands now, I think we have had enough what's supposed to have. Keep that as the first. I don't know. I'm not that much concerned with these processes, but I know that the speaker can use that person. I mean, that going. So is she supposed to be somehow so that it be done?
Okay, Michael, the line is not clear, but I'm trying to listen generously to understand the gist of what you're saying. Could be wrong, but I think you are making the point that oversight over the public protector needs to happen. And funny enough, that's one of the things we're going to talk about in the middle hour. When we talk about accountability, we need to break that notion down practically into lower levels of very specific examples. The public protector is supposed to be a mechanism of accountability. But in turn, obviously, one also has to ask the question, who provides oversight over the ones that are entrusted with an oversight role? So you also need accountability at that level, accountability of the ones entrusted with the accountability task. And in the case of the public protector, it's simple. That is a duty that inheres in our parliament. They need to come up with the rules, and then they need to apply those rules, and they need to be fair rules in terms of natural justice and other administrative and labor law principles. and apply it to her as the incumbent. And the sooner they do so, the better. But here's a question. Let me throw this one out to you, right? Forget about the EFF. Forget about Pravin Gordhan. Honestly, honestly, I'm going to ask you this as a South African and try and answer it in a non-partisan manner. Do you think the public protector is fit to be in office? If we had a vote right now, would you vote for her to go or would you vote for her to stay her entire 7 years? I'll kickstart us. I would vote for her to go immediately. I'll even pay her out for the entire 7 years and let her go. I think she's bad news. I think she doesn't get the law. I think at the level of perception, she's bad in terms of the office that she is the apex of. And I also think that she's not a particularly good lawyer, which is what you need for someone in that position. I, speaking for Eusebius, could vote against her if there was a simple question citizens were asked. Should she go or should she stay? Without even justifying your answer. You can if you want to. But I just want to do a little bit of a dip into 702 Lander's viewpoint. Should she go or should she stay? What is your opinion? 011-883-0702. 011-883-0702.
702. Open line.
Larry, good morning to you.
Hi, morning, Eusebius. Eusebius, I was just thinking about this whole public protector issue, and I think the problem regarding vexatious and frivolous litigation stems from the fact that we have a rogue public protector. And this is because she does everything, you know, off her own bat for the faction that she supports. And unfortunately, she avoids the, you know, the other side of the spectrum where you've got real villains like Julius Malema and On Point Engineering, something to the tune of 400 million that was looted from Limpopo through his On Point company with his business partner. And protecting people like Ace Makashule, you know, not being even handed in her dealings. And unfortunately, it's now turning into a black-white issue where the white lawyers are favored and the black lawyers are discriminated against. It's becoming nonsensical, but this is the sort of bad effect and negative effects that this woman is spreading throughout our society. The sooner she goes, the better, I would think. You see this?
I totally agree with you. And we need to call them out on it when they try and divert us from keeping our eye on the ball. One of the important accountability mechanisms, speaking of accountability, is that judges who get it wrong can be taken upon review. So, of course, the other side is allowed, as they've already indicated, to reserve their right to appeal, even this interdict. And it might be that a different court comes to a different judgment call. I, for example, thought that Advocate Mkatobi was quite persuasive in some of his argument. Yeah. But I also think that the court evaluated his argument quite interestingly and saying that, in a sense, some of his arguments on behalf of EFF, even if they were interesting, were not the discretionary reasoning of the public protector, and therefore they couldn't be given the kind of weighting that the court could.
Yeah.
So that, for me, was interesting.
She's rubbing Julius Malema's back because nothing has happened, you know, with his regarding his crimes, illicit gains, when he was still one of the big guys in the Limpopo province. And you must look at some of these photos, you know, holidays in Mauritius, how he's dressed, you know, with all the
paraphernalia.
Paraphernalia all around him. It's amazing.
Well, certainly the flip-flopping, Larry, I think raises an obvious question. Why the extreme addiction to flip-flopping? From press conferences where you say, yo, hey, we made a mistake with this woman, excuse South Africa, to suddenly saying they are eroding the office of the public protector. Julius is wily. There has to be an explanation for the shift, and I'm not convinced that it's principled. Godfrey, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius. How are you?
I'm good. Should she stay or should she go?
She should just go. I think the parliament needs to do what they did to Jacob, what the ANC did to Jacob Zuma. Before she messes up the country, she needs to go.
And
I listened to the interview of the deputy public protector yesterday. He said he had no idea of the report, of the APSA report. I mean, he's the deputy public protector, and that lady does as she pleases. She doesn't consult. And the interviewer asked, Vuyo, I think it's Vuyo Mvoko, he asked the deputy public protector, you are there with how things, how were you doing things when Thuli Madonsela was there?
Yeah.
And the guy said things were done differently. They were consulted before the release of every investigation. But now she just goes and releases the I think that lady is up to something.
Interesting and take. Moses, should she go? Should she stay?
Eusebius,
yes.
How's it?
How's it?
I'm fine, eh? Yeah, Eusebius, she must go. Hello?
I'm listening.
Yes, I think she must go. And my departure point is based on the fact that before we suck the lemon dry, with a little bit of credibility that she has, to go and start rebuilding it somewhere. And my other angle that I wanted to test with you was with regard to the main purpose of yesterday's sitting, with regard to the judgment. I have the feeling that the judge might have gone overboard. She's gone to town with the whole thing. My take was that yesterday's sitting was about the interdict for Praveen for the suspension of the remedial actions. And my take again is that the EFF was countering that interdict. However, in the judgment, the judge has gone as far as reviewing even the remedial action.
Here's my view, Moses, and I'm not a qualified lawyer. I'm just giving you my opinion as someone who reads and thinks.
Yeah.
I think that there is a possibility that a different court can come to a different judgment. And that's why I think appealing is perfectly legit. I think appealing it is fine. I think EFF or if the public protector wants to appeal it, I think that's fine. I think they'll have some prospects to be successful.
Yeah.
On this particular point, because I've seen it, I've seen the initial reactions from the losing sides. I'm not convinced about it. You know what she was doing there, funny enough, on my interpretation, and I don't know, maybe I'm just being very kind in the last 24 hours, more kind than normal.
Okay.
She was employing
the pain of the walk.
She was, in my mind, she was employing, funny enough, a similar kind of strategy as Tim Becker. And it's a beautiful strategy on both sides. And it was to say, I'm not taking a view on the substantive issues, on the merits of the main case, but I'm going to dip into it so that I can show you why dipping into it is necessary to come back to the interdict question. So she's not saying that his rights were violated. She says there's prima facie evidence. And the words prima facie is just Latin for I can smell a rat. But she's open to the possibility that there's no rat. So she didn't take a view, a final view. All she's saying is that there appears to be a rat. And that's enough reason to say that this man has met the first step in the decision procedure for whether to grant an interdict. So when you see a press statement as a non-lawyer that suggests that the judge overreached, that's actually very naughty on the part of the other side, because you can put this in front of a class of top law students or law academics, and it's not obvious to me that they will agree that she overreached. She spoke about the merits only insofar as she needed to come back to the question of the interdict.
Okay.
But like I say, I could be generous. I could be generous. I did find Tim Becker compelling, but you can find one side compelling and still think that there was no miscarriage of justice. These things are not like Kaiser Chiefs losing to Pirates. The law is complicated.
Okay. No, thanks, Eusebius.
Thanks so much, Moses. Motahun, good morning.
Hello.
Yebo.
Kunjaniwa.
Niphelele, kunjaniwa.
Yeah, sure. You know, me, I think she must go. Because she don't have that, in that case, she don't have strong wit. Maybe there's someone at the back. She tell you must do like this.
Okay, that's an interesting take. Katleho, do you agree with him?
Morning, Sivas. How are you?
I'm lekker, my man. How are you?
I'm fine. I think the lady should just go. Some of us have lost confidence in her. I mean, everyone that she has ruled against, has either gone to court and they have won whatever she was doing. So this simply means she cannot put facts together.
Okay.
The reports are misguided. And for me, I think she's just out of debt.
Interesting take. Brian, do you think she should stay? I'm desperately trying to find a fan of the public protectors. Are you one?
You say this, let me just say I need one last answer before I make the decision.
Yes.
And I heard a news report yesterday that said that the reason she's going after President Gordon is because of what he said about her ability and her knowledge of the law. So it seems as though her action was almost spiteful, that it was based on whim. And I'm not sure if a person in her position can actually make decisions based on women, especially on spite. Do you know about that, what you said?
I don't know, but I try to avoid the colorful language between legal teams and focus on the non-colorful bits where they get technical. For example, she's already cheesed off even at what the judge said yesterday, saying that some of parts of her remedial action is nonsensical. And I hear now even, you know, temptations to try and report the judge to the Judicial Services Commission or whatever disciplinary tribunal they have inside of them. I mean, for me, that's the least interesting part of these swipes. I want to know where you think the core of the wrong in the legal reasoning is. So I think you may be right, Brian, but I'm trying not to elevate that to the center of public discussion.
Okay, that's fine. But my leaning is still that you should go.
And why is that? Just at the level of perception?
At the level of and also of what has happened since he's been in the office.
Okay. I promise you guys, I'm randomly picking up calls. I'm waiting for someone who will argue that she should stay. Cabo, do you think she should stay?
Yes.
Yay. Okay. Tell us why.
Yep. She's touching the nerve of white people. Anyone that's touching the nerve of white people should stay. You know the mistake that we are doing? We are comparing her with the private defender because she's not well-spoken. Now, anyone who's not well-spoken, who can articulate in English, is to taken like she's not educated. Then I think personally she should stay. I'm enjoying her. I think the all black thinkers in the field of law should volunteer their services for free in her office. We want someone like her. She will stay. I'm her number one fan.
Ivan in Kensington, good morning.
No, she must go immediately. You know, in Monopoly, they've got a, when you throw the dice and you get that thing that says, go straight. Amba, quickly, Gijima. You know, there's no thought about it. Just get out. But the sad part is when you look at incompetence, you realize what an incredible mind Tuli Madonsela was or is.
Yeah.
And I think we should get a Tuli Madonsela back. She's got no option. She's just got to be forced for life. Because honestly,
well, it's a non-renewable one term, and we do it for good reason. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah, the logic for the one term is to make sure they don't suck up to the people that has the power to give them another term.
Now, one thing about that lady, she could tell you to go to hell in such a kind way, and you could actually
applaud her.
Look forward to going.
Yes.
Eusebius, you drew our attention to a Netflix thing the other day. And last night I saw something you would love, The Great Hack. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've not.
It's on Netflix, but it talks about how many times have you had things on WhatsApp or Facebook or whatever, and you read it, and sometimes you get so angry at it, or sometimes you're so incredibly excited about
yes.
it. But they prove how Facebook and WhatsApp and all those guys have used things like companies to actually source
people's opinion.
And then actually that's how Trump won. And I look at this and I'm thinking, well, my word, this could be an election winner guaranteed, because it goes up to all the people who has not decided on what to vote for. And they go for them, and they've got their opinions and work according to their opinions and give them a solution. And that's how they get them to vote for the candidate.
I'm going to check it out. I can see on Google that it's about Cambridge Analytica. That's really interesting. Is it well made? Was it compelling?
Yes. Unbelievable.
Okay, I'll check it out.
I went to bed very late last night.
Thanks for that.
I just couldn't stop watching.
Thanks for the heads up, The Great Hack on Netflix. Ivan recommends it. And it is about data company Cambridge Analytica. I'll check it out, of course. Stacey, should the public protector go or stay?
So very clearly from my side, go, but it's not because of yesterday's ruling. So I think actually yesterday's ruling is actually hiding the fact or diverting our attention from the Athena Dairy Farm and her finding on that. And if you look at how Ace Matoshule and Bruce Tsiri Nkwebane, the linking there, I actually think we're sitting in a very dangerous time bomb with our attention diverted from Ace Matoshule. And if we're not careful as a nation, we'll end up with another 10-year Zuma reign with Ace Matoshule, because he now can get away with whatever his plan is, and we all sit by and take target at the CCWA when it should actually be him.
That's and a very good point. That's such a good point.
From when we had, you know, Jacob Zuma, we all stood around in dismay as a president coming in with rape allegations. Now we've got Ace Matoshule, who obviously we have Gangster State, the book. We have all these allegations against him, and we're all in dismay. But if we are not careful as a nation, we'll end up with him as our president and then wonder how we got there. So I actually think it starts with Busisiwe Mkhwebane, because she's the one that actually had the Athena Dairy Farm issue kind of put to bed.
I hear you. Totally. Spot on. Thanks for that, Stacey. We need to keep our eye on the ball, and she's in some ways a distraction, apart from being a hindrance. Joshua, 20 seconds. You can have the final say on what's been a fiery open line. What do you want to say?
Hi, UCS. Unfortunately, the public protector is to go, eh? Unfortunately, I mean, from my side, with her behavior, you know, I've come to the conclusion that, I mean, she's being used by someone to fight the current leadership. I mean, she's there to protect the country, but it's like we're not benefiting. It's like people's interest and stuff.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Beautifully put. Thanks for a fantastic, energetic, and sharp open line. And of course, sometimes we agree and disagree and have sharp debates. You know exactly what you're in for on this unscripted first hour of Radio of the Day. Coming up in the next hour after the 10 o'clock news bulletin, we ask, how do we go about entrenching accountability in South African society?